This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Tea with Louise, another episode where I interview really interesting astrologers who are also authors. And today I'm really, really excited and honoured to be talking to and having tea with Brian Clark, who's over there in Australia, in Tasmania, correct? And Brian began his self-study of astrology in 72 in Canada, taking his first formal astrology class the following year. I'm not going to read every word. Since 1984, Brian has been a full-time consulting and educational astrologer, having served as national president for both the Canadian and Australian National Astrological Associations. Consistently throughout these years, Brian has been involved with the local and global astrological community. In 86, Brian and his partner Glenys Lawton founded Astrosynthesis, the four-year astrological program, which is now a comprehensive distance learning program. And from 89 to 20, and I'll put a link for that in the show notes. From 89 to 2015, the astrological program was housed at the Chiron Center, which became a vital focal point for astrology in Melbourne and Australia, reaching thousands of students and so on and so forth. There's so much you've done, so I'm just going to read a few other little bits. Brian's enthusiasm for mythology and classics underscores his astrological focus, and he's guided over 17 tours to the sacred sanctuaries of ancient Greece, particularly those dedicated to healing and divination, which I wish I'd known about a long time ago. So before we talk, I've not known Brian. I knew of Brian Clark for quite some time, but two synchronicities came into my awareness fairly recently. I interviewed Melanie Reinhardt, who I call the Centaur Queen, which makes her laugh. And Brian is a contributor to a book on the centaurs that's coming out hopefully by the end of this year. I'll put a link in the show notes to where you can get an email when that book is actually published. But Melanie said, "Oh, you should meet Brian Clark." And I was like, "Oh, that's really funny." Because a friend of mine messaged me yesterday to say that she had read Astrological Time, one of your books, and she said, "It's the best book I've ever read on astrology." So immediately I bought the book and started reading all your stuff. And and I was like, there's something here, and I just have to ask Brian if he'd like to speak to me on my podcast. And luckily, he said yes. And then we found out that Brian's sun is at exactly the same degree as my north node, amongst other connections. So welcome, Brian. Lovely Thank to you. Have you here. So Brian's focus in his work, he talks a lot about rewilding and imagination. And I'm hoping we can unpack some of that, you know, just to give you a real idea of Brian's work, because we seem to work in very similar ways from what I've read in his articles. You know, I when I read a chart, I did at first. I would go through the books and make all these notes about this means this and this aspect means that. But once I let go of the books and just let the symbols speak to me, and in consultation with the client, things come through that I've probably never really exactly read in a book, but of course they're informed by my training. And so I'd love you to talk a little bit more about that, Brian.
Well, thank you, Louise. Well, Well, first of all, let's go right back to what you mentioned about synchronicity. Like, well, you've heard, it's so funny. I mean, say you heard, which is nice, you've heard of me. Like, I like to stay low underneath the horizon. But you see, for me, astrology works when it presents itself to you, not like when we try to, you know. So of course, synchronicity is so much part of it. So you and I can now say, well, it's our time to meet, isn't it? Like, it's our time to meet, because it wasn't time to meet way back then if we try to force it and everything like this. And so whenever we have synchronicities, whenever these synchronicities happen, and so amazing, so yesterday you get this email or text, there's always an archetypal resonance underneath that. You know, if that's what Jung talked about, you know, so synchronicity, it's not just a magical happening. It's actually tied together through the archetype, which faces out into the world, but also faces into the soul. So it's always very interesting then to what is that archetype? Now, already in astrology, we know that we've got this conjunction of the sun and the north node, which is quite lovely. But I also have my sun and your descendant, which I thought was very interesting too. Yeah. And so we have many connections. So immediately we can use the astrological archetypes to actually try to expand what maybe our connection is. But I always start from the premise of not knowing. Well, I do know the archetype. You know, I know that my sun and your north node are together, but I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. So I always start from the premise of not knowing. I know what the sun and the north node represent. Mm-hmm. And so it is through an engagement through an engagement and also through relationship. That becomes the most important thing, mm-hmm. I feel. Through relationship, then something else can emerge. So as you were speaking, first of all, I'm trying to understand or think about, well, what was that archetype that brings us together? Mm-hmm. Is it the centaurs? Is it the sense of the wildness? Is it the sense of something outside the astrology that everybody knows? Like, you know, we think this is astrology and then we realize there's something, another force field outside of that. Is that what draws us together, perhaps?
Mm.
So I guess the other thing to say then, to go back to what you're saying about your sitting with a horoscope, no longer imposing yourself on it and letting something emerge, what happens is the symbol speaks to you, or through an image. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you're more an intuitive type, so therefore it speaks to you through a kind of sense of a feeling that's moving fast into the future. Mm-hmm. Some people who are you know, very sensate, they'll feel it in their body. Or if you're thinking type like me, words drop in. Somebody says a word, and all of a sudden a whole picture opens up to me. You know, so if you're a feeling type, of course you're feeling, oh, you know, you're feeling miserable or sad, you know, and it's on the feeling. So, you know, our sensual natures help us, I think, read the symbol more than a student would know when they're studying. They think the symbol means that. No. That's just helping you locate it. It has a voice, and that's what we're trying to find out.
Exactly. I actually get a big tingle in the back of my head.
Okay.
Yeah, when it really starts kicking in, I could feel this big tingle. And then, I just know things. So that's what I call it. I just know.
Yeah. But you know what, Louise, you already know it. But, you know, that's what's so interesting. But we think knowing has to be in some sense of causal, mm-hmm. rational way. Mm-hmm. And when we realize that knowing is actually so irrational and unconscious, then the symbols really work.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to take away from studying the astrology clearly and learning the words and things. And you don't, I know you don't either. So, but I just love this, this whole thing about imagination. And I like Dane Rudyard too. And you kind of refer to him quite a lot in his, in your articles and books and things as well. You say he, encouraged a symbolic deliberation on astrological symbols. And I really liked that sentence. I had to kind of highlight that one in your article that I was reading and highlighting. He said, to liberate astrology from being merely observed from a rational and predictive perspective. And I kind of would call that rewilding myself too, because, And the centaurs, do you feel that this kind of, I kind of believe that they've come in to kind of help us to bridge that gap between that kind of rational inner world of the planets. I look at the order of the planets, and then these things come in from way out there and bridge this gap so that we start really connecting with something out there. What would you think to that theory?
Well, we use words, we use theories, don't we? But underneath the theory is a feeling, a feeling sense. So I would be trying to encourage a feeling sense in you. Like, that's, it's more a knowing. It's a theory, but there's a knowingness, because that's the order. I mean, I would agree. It bridges. It's like the quantum world. You know that. I don't know what we'll want to call it. There's all kinds of names for it. Unconscious, spirit world, other world.
I
would agree with that. I'm drawn, because of my classics love, I'm drawn back to the, you know, when the centaurs really started to emerge in image, and that was about the 5th century BC, of course, in Athens. In the sculptures, they were oftentimes used for the metopes, like all the metopes all around the Parthenon, for instance, all the battle with the centaurs, because it came into kind of consciousness that when Greece, this developing kind of civilization, was attacked by the Persians, they saw those as barbarians. So they use the story of the battle with the centaurs as a battle with barbaric forces and other forces, wild forces. And in civilization, of course, we're trying to conquer that. And like in astrology, we're still trying to conquer that in astrology, saying, well, you know, like the second house is a bad house, and you know, our Venus and Scorpios aren't doing very well in the list of all the things. And all of that's very important to give a condition to a particular archetype, where it's located. Oh, this might be located in the underworld, that might be located in heaven. But there's no difference between heaven and the underworld in terms of soul. And so it's when we bring the judgment to it that we really sort of fall down. So I would agree that the centaurs are asking us to reconsider, rewild, our sense of what barbarianism is, of what nature is, the natural world.
Yeah. And also, I talk a lot, you know, for want of better terms, in terms of the divine feminine and the divine masculine. We kind of know that the astrological language has been, you know, very male, really, and very kind of patriarchal, almost, in kind of defining rational. And I don't mean this about men and women. I'm talking about this energetically at all. So there's nothing, nothing gender based about this. It's all been about putting things in boxes, and this means this, and this means that, and if this happens, this is going to be bad, and this is malefic, and this is benefic. So that gets onto the language thing. So I don't use any of those terms.
well, they're difficult. But even when we use more other terms, like shadow, for instance, or underworld, even those in our culture that we now live in have really become so limited. I mean, you know, and wonderful, I, you know, very fond of Jung and all of his, like his images of anima, who's such a rich, but now people think anima is a something, you know, like we all have one. Well, where is it? Can I find it? Or even soul now has become something that we can commodify. So this is one of the great dilemmas about even the language we use in astrology now. So we find ourselves apologizing for what we say, well, this is masculine. Well, I don't really mean it as male or gender. You know, we find ourselves.
I know.
But why? Because the language is no longer speaking to us. It no longer speaks to it. Because what you're trying to say, I know what you're trying to say, but then you're also aware of a response is going to come back at you saying, you're being limited there, Louise. You know, like,
exactly.
So it's like really we're, I guess, we're really trying to discover new ways to evoke the images through astrology.
Mm.
We're not going to evoke them by saying, well, you know, you're... Venus is in detriment, exile, or, you know, fall. We know that it is, but how can we begin to bring that alive in the moment? Because that's your nature. Why should we take your nature away from you?
Yeah, I know. It's a constant struggle for me to find language that is really working, and I haven't got there yet. But I keep trying to, find language. I am exploring it because I love language. I love words, Gemini moon, and all that Sagittarius. And constantly, I've even done a talk on the astrological language. And
have you? That'd be interesting.
And I know you've probably looked, and I wrote this book, my second book. I was actually commissioned to write it. To write non-binary language, but it went kind of beyond that. I was like, well, we've got the language of sect, and I'm sure you know what that is, night and day. Instead using night and day instead of masculine and feminine, but then night has its own problems sometimes because people are scared of the dark and it all becomes very
interesting you go there, because night and day, that goes back to me a long time about I always use that. I started to use that rather than yin and yang, and we can't put that on the level of masculine and feminine. You're absolutely right, there's a bit of a difference, but I think night and day is such an astrological image. You see, it's an astrological image. And those nodes, sunrise, sunset, which is the nodal points of the day in a way, they tell us so much about changes and shifting. So I think that they're powerful words to use in language. Yeah.
You've also got that also brings in the twilight thing, which is nice to say that nothing is black and white.
Yeah. And there's so many myths around twilight and myths around sunrise, dawn, goddess of dawn. You know, the Hesperides, the goddesses of the twilight. So there are many also stories that connect us to those times and the rising and setting of the sun. That also goes, doesn't it? I guess what we're trying to find in our language is the metaphor. Like once we get a metaphoric language rather than a descriptive language, then our consultations go much more smoother.
Yeah. So I think you are a fan of telling stories and things as part of the astrological consultation, or you see it as telling a story. I don't mean telling a whole tale. You know what I mean? Telling a story of somebody's soul, if you like, as you're reading.
I'm sure like you had changed over the years, didn't it? Like I used to start out thinking I had to tell a client everything, the whole title. And then I had a few experiences where I realized, so I started to change and listen more.
Mm-hmm.
Because in listening, I could really then hear, and then I could use the chart too. And so then, I tried to weave that into the story. So myth became very important as a backdrop for me, the mythological stories, which suited so many of the things, and trying to help the individual see that what they saw as pathological or traumatic and all that, which it is, actually belongs to a kind of human experience, and not just something that's their particular curse. So in many ways, trying to take the curse away by telling the appropriate story.
Mm-hmm.
But telling the story, I guess, of the soul would would be more like trying to be soul. I think I was more trying to be soulful about telling the story, because how would I know the story of the soul? You know, like, so I just try to be soulful about the story of the soul.
Yeah.
You know, anything in the chart, try to be more soulful about it, more inquiring, more listening, more rather than. And so that also meant my clients started to change. Mm. And that also meant my clients wanted to stay longer with me. So they would come back. So they wanted to come again. And so all my practice now is basically pretty well either students with tutorials or all my regular clients.
Yeah.
You know, they're very regular. So what are we going to? We the symbols speak all their life, and
they do, don't they? Yeah. How often do your clients usually return?
Well, it's all very different. I have clients once a month. I have clients a couple of times a year, four times a year. Love them once a month, or the ones that you know. They're in a critical phase, Bone Brian, you know, like that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just wondered because I have never quite done that, where I'm kind of like the regular therapist almost, even though I'm not a therapist. So, But I've never quite had that. Most of mine only come back about every year for a top-up,
Well, that happens too. You know, like I have those kind of clients, and they're the ones that also see the birthday as being very important, their birthday year. So, of course, the soul return becomes such an important tool for that. Wonderful tool. And so I have those kind of clients. But then the kind of clients who, it's like, I think, Louise, we develop ways of making conversation.
Yeah.
I hope we're having one. I hope I'm not doing all the talking. But we have conversations where meaningfulness is developed, and many people miss that in their life. So it's not like we have to. What they're looking for is meaning. You know, give me meaning, give me purpose to what's going on in my life.
Yeah,
and that's a rare thing. We don't have to be extremely. We don't have to be therapeutic, or we don't have to be trained as anything. In fact, the more untrained one is, sometimes the more receptive they can be, the more oracular they can be.
Yeah. And you've seen my chart anyway. I've got that Venus, Neptune in Scorpio, my midheaven. People tell me things. I'm a very good listener. I do spend most of my sessions listening, actually. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Well, that takes me back then to your love of imagination. I mean, your Venus... You know, you must have loved mystery novels when you were a kid, or the Bronte sisters, or those images that brought you to a reverie of being in the world in a mysterious way.
Yeah, always. It was a long time, and you know, like many people, I kind of fell away from it for a while as life happened, and I thought I should be doing certain things in my life, but it's come back again, thankfully. So.
Well, it would never go away because it's part of nature. Where's
exactly.
it going to go?
Exactly.
If it didn't come back, well, we know what would probably have happened. You'd be... Oh, we won't say that. No, I'm going to say it. I'll tell you later.
So you also talked about... I've done quite a lot of highlighting on this. So you talk about how, and you kind of touched on it, but I could love to kind of dive in a bit deeper, how a horoscope can be read directly from a theoretical or technical standpoint, but without the spice of imagination, the reading can be informative and interesting, but doesn't piece together the mystery or evokes an intimacy that is possible beyond the factual framework. I tried in my early days doing kind of cold readings. I would just have the chart, do a reading. They were still impactful, of course, you know, the astrology was still telling me things. But I think for me, as you call it, the interplay between the techniques and the symbols works better when you work with the person. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, as you're speaking, of course, I've reminded, it's interesting, it just a memory just popped in as you were speaking of, I used to do cold readings too at, in Montreal at psychic fairs and at the psychic church, the spiritual church, you know, they called, because there was a wonderful old man there called Mr. Luke, who donated, who gave me in his will all this astrology books. So thank you, Mr. Luke. That was many years ago. I remember this pregnant woman talking to me, oh, well, like, when am I going to have the baby? Well, the eclipse is coming. It'll be this day. You know, I used to be able, I said things like that. I'm horrified. And of course, she had the baby that day. So I thought, oh, this is how astrology works. But that didn't happen all the time.
No.
But enough to make me think, well, something's going on here. But what happened was that left me feeling, well, is that what it is? Is it like a weather? Is it like telling the weather? I didn't want to be a weatherman. You know, I wanted, I've got all these plans in Libra. I wanted a relationship to happen. And so then, you know, I saw that sense of that symbol when it was able to be, you know, held and worked with and talked about, how the individual then started to understand a part of themselves and be more reflective about this part. And then we're telling a story about what happened. And we could, so then something moved and something changed. And I began to, you know, work differently in that way. I started to trust I trust astrology, Louise.
I do. Like,
sometimes, you know, I think, oh, I've got to give this lecture, and I just don't, I'm so, you know, and then I show up, and it all just comes out. And it's, and I'm sure it's me, but it's not me. It's like there's a sense of being engaged with something much bigger.
I always say it kind of speaks through me, not,
absolutely.
Not from sure. me, through.
Through you.
Yeah. Absolutely. But when I said cold readings, I meant I actually recorded readings. Sometimes, like on an MP3 or something without a client present. It works so much better when you've got the client.
Well, yeah, because you get the feedback, don't you?
Exactly.
And when you see, and when a client speaks, I don't know about you, but you've got the chart. I always print out my chart. Like, I don't, can't do it on the screen. I still can't. I'm a book baby boomer. Sorry, guys. I'm one of the old guys. I'm an old guy. I put it down. Still hand draw a lot of things on it. But if the client's speaking to me, sometimes that symbol almost jumps off the page, doesn't it? So I locate that in an aspect or a planet now or something, and then try to draw that out of the client that they know that this is part of their nature, that this is natural, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's very different to say, you know, you have a Uranus Mercury conjunction on your ascendant to somebody who said, oh, I've just been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And, you know, and all of a sudden, well, you do have, you know, the Uranus Mercury on your ascendant. And the client goes, oh, this is natural. Like, it's not something I'm supposed to, this is a part of who I am, you know? You know, so you start to recognize that you can form relationships and discuss things that they've oftentimes, that are part of their nature, they've often put on the shelf. How do we bring it back? How do we rewild ourselves? Like, bring those wilder, unconscious, natural parts of ourselves back into the habitats of who we are.
Because our society in general has kind of tended to make parts of us as less desirable. And I kind of think we are who we are, like all the gritty bits, as I call them, and all the lovely shiny bits. And it's kind of deep acceptance of kind of how all of that works, and maybe how, you know, you can, I've got a Mars-Pluto square, for example, which is, you know, most people look at a Mars-Pluto square and they go, and it certainly, you know, occasionally come out in a not healthy way, but I love my Mars Pluto square because it makes me quite assertive and quite
You get things done. Look at you.
Exactly.
And you don't stop until you get them done. So, you know, it's like this is, yeah. And, yeah, you might run over a few people on the way. Well, this is
not. Only if they're not nice to you.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, well, we won't talk about that. We'll keep that internal. Yeah. Well, you know, having said that, this is what, now you're making me laugh. Because I have back in the am I allowed to tell stories or was it?
Oh yes, yeah, please do. Yeah,
I'm telling you crazy stories, but just having fun. Back in the 80s and early 90s, I had a huge string of clients who I used to say suffered from STD, which sexually transmitted debt. So you'd have these women, you know, who'd been loyal to their husbands all their life, you know, and worked hard, their husband's success because of these women. And then, of course, the whole standard, they run off with some, the bimbo, the secret, or whatever. And then, so the wife would come to see me, you know, wondering what went wrong. And your Mars square Pluto is reminding me that I would encourage them into their Mars Pluto, like, well, what went wrong was that you were betrayed, you know, like that. And what do you want to do? Well, I want to drive the BMW through his front door. I said, well, I think that's a good thing to do. So I would always check, first of all, to see if they were, this was natural, this rage inside of them was natural. And we got to talk to a lot of women about their rage. And, you know, it really gave me that sense that we talked about it. I created a safe enough place to be able to talk about it, you know, because
exactly.
Yeah, Mars Pluto, I had one of those and I have a conjunction and, we need a safe place to talk about them.
We do.
Certainly not in the podcast.
No, but we need to express these things at some place.
We do.
At some point. Yeah.
And have them honored and witnessed. And I think that's the other thing
about it.
But once somebody witnesses your true nature that you think is somehow not right, and they witness the true nature of it, then there's a kind of a sense of liberation about that.
Mm-hmm. There is. And, you know, some people come to me with their charts, and I'm sure they do with you as well, although you don't get new clients so much now in the earlier days. And if they know enough astrology, I get clients come to me and saying, oh, I really wish I didn't have this in my chart. And ugh, this part of me is horrible. And this kind of comment. And my aim is really to make them realize that there's nothing bad in their chart.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, again, we're getting back to being wild, rewilding.
Yeah.
Being bad. Yeah. What's wrong with being bad?
Well, yeah. you're right.
Sometimes you have a lot of fun being bad.
Exactly.
whatever bad is, you know, like it's different people.
Oh.
We do know that there's limits of badness.
Yes, of course.
And I guess what I trust, I have to trust that the client that I'm seeing, of course, is aware of those limits, their own boundaries and their own. But within those boundaries, what's wrong with being bad? Because if not, then the badness gets on the other side of the boundary, outside the city walls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what rewilding, isn't it? It's going outside the city walls to find all the wild plants and everything that are growing.
Yeah.
Which was Chiron's teaching, like whatever was at hand, that's what Chiron means, isn't it? Handy. Chiron is hand. Whatever is at hand is for healing. Mm-hmm. So if what's at hand is your bad part, let's let that heal us.
And use it in a fun, healthy way, really. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, and incidentally, to the listeners, Brian's chapter in the book that's hopefully published by the end of the year is a chapter on Chiron, but we're not going to just go into Chiron in great detail. But yes, Chiron of hands. I went to
Chiron's always That's where Melanie and I have formed, because her book came out in 1989, and we opened the Chiron Center in 1989. We didn't know, I didn't know Melanie, and then all of a sudden this book arrives, and I ordered it, and I'm arriving in the post, just as we start a Chiron Center, and I think, oh my God, because that
just like
been
how, yeah, just like so how this been, interview happened,
yeah.
Yeah.
Is, yeah,
yeah.
So, are we still on track?
We are. I do want to talk a little bit about techniques, though, because, you know, I think a lot of people that are listening to this will be astrologers who kind of, or baby astrologers, as I call them, who are just developing how they work. And you talked a lot in this article about technique and symbol, too. And it kind of made me laugh about all these arguments we get in astrology that you talk about. And I'm not going to ask you to go down on either side of them, because is it the inferior conjunction, for example, that is more important, or the superior conjunction? Is that the beginning of the cycle, or which house system, and all these arguments that we have in astrology all the time? And it sounds like, and I'm not one to put words in your house, in your mouth, but I always say always work. When a friend comes to me and goes, you should be using whole sign, or, you know, or whole sign's the best system, or whichever argument. It was funny. I was at ESAR, as you know, the International Study for Astrological Research Conference, and talking to a very well-known astrologer who I call the granddaddy of astrology for this kind I practice. I'm not going to name names, but he uses the mean nodes, and he's like, the mean nodes are the right nodes. And I'm like, no, they're not, because if I with my nodes, I use the true nodes, because my nodes change signs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I say, and I know I'm an Aries south node, but we laugh with each other, and he's going, well, you're just wrong, and I'm laughing the head off, and it was really funny. But I think you're the same as me, that really always work, you know. There's if we sat down and had a deeper discussion about the techniques and let the chart speak to you, you'd find there's probably something in all the house systems. They all work in different ways. They all work for something. The different nodes, the different cycles. Would you agree?
Yes. I always say continuity. That's the most important thing. I mean, my astrology was working really, really well. I wasn't, but when everybody was sort of like charging over the whole side, I wasn't going to do that, because it was working.
Yeah.
It was continuity. I mean, the whole sign was already embedded in me, because that's what we do when we look at the sun sign forecast or anything. It's put, you know, but I want to go back to your mean node, true node. And if somebody's saying the mean node is right, well, they're from my generation. You know, they're mine. And why they're in my generation? Because when we grew up, we didn't have a true node. It wasn't able to be spotted. So we all, our feminists were mean nodes. So we, and then the true node came. Oh boy. So the way I think about it is, a mean node is a wonderful node to help the students study the nodal cycle, because it moves three seconds a day. It goes 18.6 years for the signs, 18.6 days for a degree, 18.6 months for a sign. You know, there's great ways to learn about this. The cycle is wonderful, but I'd agree with you, the true node for natal and transits, you know. But I like the mean node to teach the cycle. Like, so, you know, to get the overview. And then, so it's an overview. So I think of the mean node as the overview, and then singling down into the true node as the more personal. Now, what I'd like to say about this dilemma is, we have to find our own, how it speaks to us. And like I was saying, it was speaking to me, so I wasn't going to rewire it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So once it speaks to us, and when we know it speaks to us, because there's something happens, we become symbolic. I think when it speaks to us, when it starts speaking to us, it is symbolic.
Mm.
So I would agree. Like, if we are continuous, I have a lot of, you know, in the tutorials, a lot of the students use the whole sign, so I respect their. Always meet the client, I say. So I respect their using that. And they're talking about the fourth house, and I'm thinking, oh, that's my fifth house. You know, like, so I try to meet them in there, like really what I want to support them and what they're learning. So it's, you know, I don't think there's any good or bad. Once we get good or bad, we get binary, don't we?
We do, yeah.
We lose the magic of the two nodes. We use the magic of all of the house systems, which is so mm-hmm. very interesting. So I don't know why people get so attached to theory. I guess I love theory. We need it, but we've got to leave that behind if we're going to practice.
Yeah, I agree.
If somebody walks, if a client walks into the room and they're distressed and traumatized or whatever, well, I'm not going to say, well, that's because you got Pluto on your ascendant. I'm going to try to hear something and then let the chart speak to me in a symbolic way. Your turn, Louise.
Yeah, sorry, I had something there and it's kind of gone now. It'll come back in a second. But I was thinking of orbs as well. And yeah. Yes, it's important, as you said, to teach the theory or to learn the theory, whether you're teaching or learning, and mm-hmm. to get an idea of what orbs are good and things. But I always say I'm a bit loosey-goosey with orbs, you know. I personally use porphyry because it always worked for me, and mm-hmm. I see no reason to change. But mm-hmm. With regard to houses, like I have this big Sagittarius stellium, if three of the Sagittarius stellium is in the 12th house and one lonely little planet in Sagittarius is in the previous house, but near the cusp, I always say it's the 12th house because it's pulled in by the other planets. So, yeah, I might read both houses for it. So I don't know how you feel about that loosey-goosey kind of.
But I see, again, it's interesting when you say loosey-goosey, it's not supporting your way of looking at it. No, it's not. I don't see that as loosey-goosey. But yeah. How I used to teach the cusp, that's why I like the quadrant system, because I love the cusp. So, so that everything's not always sort of comes back to the ascendant. It does. But I would teach the cusp sort of as a doorway, like, yeah. You know, so a door. So, and if you're, let's imagine the door of your 12th house is 10 degrees, but you have a planet that's say 7. Well, that 7-degree planet is looking at the door, you know. Yeah. They're looking to get out of there. I'm going to the, so they're looking to open the door. Their consciousness there is in the next house. They're in this mm-hmm. house. There's no doubt it's in the 11th house, but it's looking mm-hmm. in the 12th. So I would agree that it takes part in. So I try to encourage the students to have ways of thinking. That's the most important thing for me. Ways of thinking about this. This is what the tradition says. How can we take that tradition and open it up into a metaphoric way of thinking? Mm. Yeah. How can I find a metaphor for it? You know, so one of the things I always send to the students is, use the word as if. That immediately gets you in that metaphor territory. Mm. Don't say this is, say it's as if. So if you can get away by saying, you know, so our Venus is in Scorpio. If we said Venus in Scorpio is, but if I say it's as if and draw a metaphor, mm. it liberates a client to think, I need to think about this. Yeah. So I try to have people have ways of thinking about things, get ways to think about how to use what you've been taught in your own way.
I'd like everybody to write that down. It's as if. I'm going to be using that one all the time. I really like that.
Well, it's easy. Yeah. It's easy. Isn't it very easy?
Yeah.
Look at, it's as if. And then a story emerges, a metaphor emerges, an analogy. I feel I'm talking too much. I
always do. So. Well, okay. But I want to people to hear you.
Well, it's like one of the things, and Jeffrey Cornelius and does a wonderful thing on this. But in when we use like an analogy, like astrology is analogic, isn't it? It's got logic, but it's actually also without logic. Because how can we logically say astrology works, but it has incredible logic? So it's like, so when we use an analogy, you know, so when we, even when we say Mercury is in Pisces, and then we try to describe it, it's like an analogy. And once you get the analogy, something can turn. And then the client can begin to think about different things and da, da, da. And once they think about that, they start to think about different. And then in that moment, it can turn. And that's when the divine enters, you know, like the, when I say divine, the wild, the divine, the natural, and something turns and something changes. Now that doesn't happen. So we go back to what we're discussing before. That doesn't happen if I just say, if I just do a cold reading and say, well, you've got a Sagittarius rising, you're happy chappy. You know, that nothing's going to turn there, is it?
No.
But if we can draw, you know, Sagittarius rising, it's as if, you know, you put on a happy face. That might be a different way for the client to receive that. And then all of a sudden they might think, do I do that? And then they might realize, oh yeah, I have. And then they start to consider something and it changes and then the new conversation develops.
Yeah. Mm. Wonderful. I'm learning so much from this. I hope you are all too. I think I'm learning more all the time. Oh, come on, Brian, you're too modest. You've been practicing and writing for a lot longer than I have, so I can always learn from you.
That's actually, Louise, we learn. If I hadn't taught astrology, you know, for all those years, I learned all the time from students. Every class, they'd be telling me a new version of the archetypal story. And I'm thinking, so I always say to my students, you know, and my clients, I mean, they're the ones I learned from. I mean, I learned the techniques and books from all the wonderful authors and writers and everyone. And we have amazing astrologers today. But I learned astrology in the classroom and in my consulting room.
I'd agree. I don't think you really embody astrology till you actually start practicing it with clients and things. I think you can, and I tell everybody who's going, I'm never going to learn all of this. I'm like, well, I'm still learning things every single day. and I didn't really start, those charts didn't really start speaking to me until I actually started consulting with clients.
And as you're saying that, Louise, I'm also very aware of, you know, life cycle, and I'm in the period of my life where I'm starting to forget. Like sometimes I think, like, you know, all the things that I knew way back then. But what you never forget is the feeling response. That you never forget. So people say, how do you remember the chart? I don't remember the chart, but I remember that like I'll always remember that you have. We have our sun node. I have my sun and your descendant. Why? Because there was a feeling response. Like, so I'll always know your descendant because I had a feeling response. I'll ascendant as well. I had a feeling response to that. So when you were speaking, I was realizing the more we keep cramming in there about all the techniques, we can't retain all that information.
No.
We can't.
Cannot.
So we have to choose what works. Works best for us. You know, so I don't put all the asteroids into the horoscope, but I love the asteroid. If I hear a client talking about a theme that's like that asteroid, I put it in the chart, and then I heard it before I put it in. So that's how I do it now. And I don't put anything in the chart that I don't understand myself or actually have a feeling response for, because then I know I'm drawn into the intellect. Well, what does this mean? Then I have to give them a theoretical response rather than a.
Yeah. I take things in and out of my charts all the time. For I do kind of daily kind of written forecasts and videos and things, and I put more in for that, you know. But if I'm doing a client consultation, then you know, I'll only really put in what's prominent or speaking to me, or I'll add things even in the consultation, like as you say. I'm like, I do the same with that, with the asteroids and things. Even though I adore the asteroids and all the centaurs. And Black Moon Lilith and everything.
Kelly Hunter, I listened to one of her wonderful presentations on, is it
Cellini?
The shimmering goddess. Oh, no, see this. Yeah, I forgot the name already, but it's so it's where a word salacious comes from.
I think I know.
But you know, it was wonderful. It was very inspiring. It was so wonderful. So there's all of these. Now, some will speak to others and some won't, you know. Mm-hmm. Some will speak like, so some will speak to us and some won't. Like, not everything's going to speak to us. Like, we're different. We have our own natures. And so when we find that, what is really working and speaking and so on, then we can find the archetype behind what people are really speaking about. Mm-hmm. And that's what naturally, I think, weeds out, if that's the right word, that's talking about rewilding. Your clients, you know, I'm not going to get it. I no longer would have in my later, when I was seeing lots of clients that come to me to tell me something or want an answer to something. Now, having said that, there's a lot of clients that did want an answer, but they were willing to explore all kinds of things, and that was okay. But those who just wanted me to sit there telling the answer, well, they disappeared. They never got it.
So. Yeah, I even put on my website at one point. I don't know if it's still there. I edit it now and again. That, you know, if you're looking for me to give you a date when you're going to get married, you're probably better off going to another astrologer.
You know what the truth is, though? The truth, Louise, is that if that client who wanted that date let you explore with her,
yes,
you would come up with the right date. I trust astrology. But we have to see that the clients are as equally responsible for this consultation as we are.
Exactly. And I kind of said it tongue in cheek, because often that's the kind of person who just comes wanting this straight answer, you know. Me to tell you, they don't want to discuss anything. It's like, yeah, I think I probably took it out, but there's my Mars Pluto for you.
Wipe it up, wipe it up. You know, you no longer exist, you know, like, so you're out of the picture.
you don't want to have deep conversations, then we're not a fit.
Oh boy, it's hard, isn't it? Because I mean, we're not just such nice people. We have sometimes terrible feelings, and
we're human. And I always say things tongue in cheek to everybody listening. You probably know by now, if you're my podcast listeners, because I've got that trickster moon and all that jokey energy in my chart. So I'm actually one of the most deep listeners and empathic readers. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm thinking, you know, because I'm a lot on social media and I get messages, you know, saying, just one quick question. And I'm thinking, no.
But that's the thing. First of all, I want to acknowledge your what you do, you know, like your podcast, when you're sending all your listeners and... the way that this is a new way, isn't it? And have that amount of, well, I guess it came with the Pluto Mars, because Pluto Mars is very influential. I may not know that, but there's a kind of a sense that, you know, well, I just want to acknowledge what you do. That's really what I want to do.
Thank you.
No, no, what you do, and it's wonderful, the podcasts and the books. It's a contribution, and we're always learning, finding new ways to do things. So it becomes very, very important. And I guess our trick is always tongue-in-cheek, is saying, finding the right way to say it, because sometimes it can be a bit sharp, especially when you get tired. Tired.
Oh, yeah.
Time that person has asked me that question, and nine other times I gave the answer. So, yeah, like, but this is part of life too. Astrology evokes so many questions in us, but I guess what I'd like to tell anyone who's listening is that astrology evokes the question, but, and it can also give us the answer, but it has to actually be, we have to know what the question is. A lot of people think, oh, will I get married, you know, That's not the question. That's not the question.
It isn't.
The question is about, am I able, you know, to be in a relationship? Am I able? What, you know, there's all kinds of, it's not that easy. So astrology will evoke many questions. I guess what I want to say is there's no simple answers to those questions.
There isn't. And, you know, if the client's receptive to it, when they, if I feel there's the connection and they ask a question like that, will I get married? I kind of go, well, that's up to you. Let's look at what's your makeup and, you know. Yeah.
It's interesting because I'm thinking about, gee, if anybody is listening who's a Hori practitioner or whatever, I mean, I think Hori is just absolutely wonderful. And because if you bring in this aspect that we're speaking about, like the symbol, I'm thinking about like how many times, you know, there have been many things I've sat with people about the right time to sell their house or the right time to have this particular operation or many of them, the right time to get married. I mean, I've done a lot of that with people, but I it's like I try to think about it as a journey. Let's do this together.
Yeah.
It's not I'm just going to sit here and do some calculations.
Give you a list of dates or...
Yeah. So there becomes a kind of a journey that we go on. And part of that journey, certainly when I was doing, you know, marriage times and that was, you know, about the way to the wedding. How do we deal with this? What's possible? What's not possible? What's our expectations? And all of that then became a kind of embrace of working with all these different energies.
I'd love to talk about your books a little bit. Clearly, I've got this one.
Okay.
Astrological Time, Cycles of the Soul, Transits, Progressions, and Returns. I think it's
Can I just
really...
say, Louise, that photo on the cover is a magnificent photo of Prudence. And she's like, you know, Cronus time, and then we have opportunity. That's Kairos, and opportunity always had the forelock, and so opportunity run by us. We had to catch it by the forelock, you know. So that's really like Saturn and Kairos. You know the You know, so I love that picture. To me, that captured how astrology tries to help us grab the right time, if you will.
That is awesome. Yeah. I hope you all caught that. There's the grabbing the...
Yeah.
Cool. And this Definitely. Book is brilliant. But tell us about your other books. You've got...
I guess what we're talking about today is the book Soul, Symbol, and Imagination. And... if we have time, can I tell a story of how those books, the first book I wrote in astrology was 1999 called The Sibling Constellation. That went out of print. And my fate with print, with publishers hasn't been good. It's like I was the last one in the series of Arcana. They canceled it. Nobody wanted to reprint it, although I got all these requests from people wanting to get it, but nobody wanted to reprint it. And out of the blue, in Taiwan, thank goodness, because I do a lot of seminars in Asia and so on. The publishers kind of wanted me to write this series of books. That's how those books happened. And then I couldn't get any English publishers, but dear Frank Clifford helped me self-publish them. So Frank did that for me. And so those books were really, I call them, not so much written, but they're more compilations of all my class notes for all those years. Yeah, so that time, with a little bit of an introduction. But the book that was, I felt, was for me was that Soul, Symbol, and Imagination, which was written after we left the Caron Center and I had more time to reflect on what happened to me in astrology for all those years. Mm-hmm. And one morning I woke up with almost like the chapters of the book, and I thought, I'll start this, and that all developed. So that's called Soul, Symbol, and Imagination, and talks about what happened to me what astrology did to me.
And it's called The Artistry of Astrology.
Yeah, The Artistry.
The subtitle. So
yeah
I'll wonderful. I'll put a link to that book in the show notes too. I will be buying that one as well. So
that one, that's sort of like what I try to, I don't know, Not everyone's going to enjoy that. Like those of you who might have a fixed head due to bone astrology, please don't buy it. But
I think most of my listeners are the other way.
The other books are what's called From the Moment We Met. That was on Synastry, Synastry and so relationships and Synastry all in one book. A big one. I called it From the Moment We Met because meeting charts have always been so profound for me. You know, that's helped me with the struggle. The times people meet, you know, when they serendipitously cross paths, so to speak, that's amazing. Rather than so it's about adult relationships. It's not about because I wrote another book called Family Legacy, which is about the family relationships. And then because my wife's a family therapist, so we developed a whole program on family in our teaching. And what's the other one? Oh, on vocation, which I love. Vocation.
Yes.
Because that was always the questions people come to me. And vocation, of course, is bigger than just a job or a career.
Oh, way more. Yeah. That's why I kind of like, you know, the midheaven, your career. I like that Stephen Forrest calls it your mission in life.
Yeah.
It's
the mission. It's because vocation, I like to call it the calling. That's what the word means. Isn't it? To hear, to be called.
Yeah.
And you know, and we are all called, unfortunately. But you've got to leave the herd to be called, you know, like that's what you did.
Yes.
That's what chironic people do, is they have to leave the herd. We never feel part of it anyway.
No.
And we've got to take that. It's a big step. And you look at what you've done. You've done really well. Your books are.
Thank you.
You sell more of your one book than I would sell of all of my like you know. But it's not about that for me. You know.
No, it isn't. I got paid to write this, so I make no money from the sales, which is fine. It's my business card. I knew the risk when I signed the contract. My first book didn't sell many, so I wouldn't have made any money from that. But they paid me quite well for it, and then they paid me. I know it's a publisher who works differently, and I was like, well, you know, I want to write books, and they're offering this, and it's kind of like my calling card, so.
That's fascinating. Yeah, because because we do need help. I mean, it's pretty difficult. I mean, so I had help, and thank you, Frank, and thank you for all of the Taiwanese people who helped me, and many people. That all the people, I should just so many people. We need help. But that's fascinating, you know, because we do. I think we all have this fascination that books are going to, you know, somehow, like, and it's like, I get so excited when someone, like, if somebody tells me they read the book, I mean, it's like, oh my goodness, you feel sort of exposed. I always feel, God, you know.
But astrology books really don't make much money.
No. Gee, you've just destroyed my fantasy that I had you, like I had you. All your sales.
But it does bring me clients, so that's
and also the service that you've done.
I just wanted to write books. I actually didn't do it for money or fame.
And as I said, I know writers, and they're different. I still don't kind of consider myself a writer. Like, I'm a compiler, except for that soul symbol in astrology. Mm. Something happened there that I couldn't say, oh, that felt like writing. Mm. But all the other stuff. And when I do articles, I feel like I write. I love doing articles. But anyway.
Mm. Well, Brian's writing is lovely. So I hope you'll check his books out. And I also will put a link in the show notes to astrosynthesis.com.au. That's all your teaching program, your distance learning program. So I will put that link. And I will also put a link to the publisher of this upcoming book that keeps getting pushed back because there's one or two contributors who are a little bit tardy, shall we say. I met one of them at ESAR and I'm going to get him on my podcast to encourage him to get the chapter out.
you're very supportive of that project, which is wonderful. Melanie was the one who I think who brought me into that. She and so Chiron's been my passion. So I just wrote about this. It was an update of things I've done before on the cycle of Chiron. You know, that's an important cycle. Also on our website, I try and put resources. I have some student resources that people can get, and there's a heap of articles if they're interested. So there's other things there besides that, you know, that you can wander through.
Well, thank you so much for coming and being on my podcast, Brian. It's been such a pleasure, and I know you're kind of not a limelighty kind of person, and I've kind of thrust you out onto the podcast a little bit there, but you've been a pleasure to talk to, and I feel like I've learned such a lot from you. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we?
Well, I'm just aware that most of the time I just felt I was speaking to you. I forgot we were on a podcast. I mean, I have the microphone, but
good.
It just felt like, so I really thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. And I hope we'll keep in touch now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening.